Welcome to Decarbonizing Commerce, where we explore what's new, interesting, and actionable at the intersection of climate innovation and commerce. I'm your host, Keith Anderson, and together we'll meet entrepreneurs and innovators reinventing retail, e-commerce, and consumer products through the lenses of low carbon and commercial viability.
Welcome to the Decarbonizing Commerce podcast. I'm your host, Keith Anderson, and our guest this week is Ryan Lutberger, founder and CEO of Clean Cult, a cleaning company with a focus on ingredients that are better for you and better for the planet and less wasteful packaging. And Clean Cult is a brand that, like many, started in the direct-to-consumer channel but has been expanding distribution in brick-and-mortar mass. And it was really interesting to me to hear some of Ryan's experience and thinking about how to meet both retailers and consumers where they are in terms of education and behavior change as they're trying to drive awareness with a different product form and unconventional packaging, drive trial and change behavior. So it's a very rich discussion. We also get into fundraising and other challenges of growing a business and a category. So I'm eager for you to meet Ryan Lutberger, CEO and founder of Clean Cult.
Ryan, good to see you. Thanks for joining us for the Decarbonizing Commerce podcast.
Thanks so much for having me today. Looking forward to it.
Why don't we kick things off just by learning a little bit about your background and the founding story of Clean Cult.
Yeah, so personally, I'm Crunchy. I was born in Boulder, Colorado. So grew up with a lifestyle and better for you everything. Better food, better products. We looked at every ingredient list. And it was just frankly like imbued in the lifestyle of where I grew up. The parents are out there. They were part of the transcendental meditation movement and really also just prioritized wellness, right? So kind of grew up in this space and then went totally different direction, right? So then went out actually to the East Coast and went to a school called Babson, which is a entrepreneurial school focused on supporting big businesses, right? And family business to fast food banking to consulting. But when I was there, I looked at the back of my bottle of laundry detergent, and this was 2016, and I didn't see any ingredients listed. And, you know, I was still a Boulder kid at the time and basically said, this doesn't make sense. Why aren't there ingredients? There's ingredients on my food, on my shampoo even. Why not our household cleaning products? So just had this big kind of aha moment. It was, why aren't some of the things we put on our skin, in our homes, and on our sheets, for example, regulated, right? So the more research I did to why there weren't ingredients, the crazier the industry became. And in the US compared to the UK, we allow basically over 1,400 ingredients that are banned overseas. So it's just it's a pretty nasty space. And, you know, I think we've seen this massive movement of in me, organic food, on me, personal care products, but now it's finally happening around me, right? And like 3% of the weight of your clothes is actually leftover laundry detergent, but you have people that think about that every day. So the more research I did in this category, it was the more wow. And it always wanted to support businesses that could solve big problems. So we went down this whole big journey. In 2016 to 2017, I looked at all the natural products in the whole category, but they were all covered in plastic packaging, right? For me, it was how could the better brands out there be better if they use so much petroleum packaging? And I walked Target, Kroger, Walmart, and it's a sea of plastic, right? And it was just this big cognitive dissonance for me. So took a big step back and said, we got to do something better. And I tried dilutables, concentrates, powders, DIY, vinegar, but it was all too complex, didn't really work that well. And we basically said, there's nothing out there that works. So, you know, took a big step back and said, could we deliver a better product with cleaner packaging, cleaner ingredients in a way that would meet shoppers and myself where they were? So we did. So we launched the first ever soap cleaners and detergents in milk cartons instead of plastic bottles, and launched officially in January 1 of 2019. So it's almost been 5 years now.
Well, that's great background and context. And I didn't realize you were a Colorado guy. I grew up in Aurora.
I
grew up in Aurora and then went to Boston College. So
not
very
not
similar
an
journey.
Identical trajectory, but sort of similar.
Yeah.
Now, did you say silk detergent?
Laundry detergent. So okay, no, just gotcha. Started my typical laundry, and we tried again everything under the sun. But you just see that big plastic jug, and just for me, it never made sense. And you know, the more research you do in this history of this category, is the crazier it becomes, because really, in the last only 20 years, have we started selling and making cleaning products in plastic products. 40 years ago, it was mostly in powder in a box, right? So this new plastic problem we have is literally originated in the last 20, 30, 40 years. So we created a problem out of nowhere, and now it's how do we get back to, frankly, where we were 30 years ago. So that's really what we're trying to innovate and create here at Clean Coal.
So I'm interested maybe in starting with the ingredient side. You know, yep. you mentioned we are a little more permissive with product formulations than some of our peers abroad. Yep. How do you define clean at Clean Coal?
Yep. So we have basically our no-no list, right? That would align with a Whole Foods, a leading, you know, natural retailer. So that's a big, big piece that we follow. But we also try to look at ingredients that have less or no carbon impact on the whole chain, right? So cleaning products typically now are all petroleum based. So they come really effective, you know, that blue bottle that works really, really well, but it has a negative downstream effect, right? And those petroleum polymers that are made really clean very well. It goes after dirt, grime, all these different pieces, but they don't dissolve very well when they enter the waste stream or the waterways, right? So we have our no-no list, and our formulations are mostly based in coconut. So it's sodium colcosulfate. So just as effective as we believe the leading natural products, leading products generally, free from all the harsh chemicals, free from dyes, free from really any phosphates, which are also caused what's called eutrophication in waterways, which means all the algae grows, and it's really bad for, again, our different waterways. And then essential oils, right? So our formulation philosophy here is has to clean, has to be ingredients you can generally pronounce, has to be plant-based and better for you, and wholly biodegradable. So that's the formulations that we've created here across hand soap, dish soap, all purpose, and laundry detergent.
And has that been consistent pretty much since the start, or have you evolved it a bit over time?
We've evolved it a bit, like every brand. I think we're on formulation iteration 8 or 9, like every brand. But what we really figured out is in this whole journey is really we have to meet the shoppers where they are. And I know I'll probably repeat that multiple times a day, is when we started this, we had prices that were over, frankly, the leading natural or better for you cleaning products in the market, right? Even though we had a reduced waste package or plastic-free products, customers were not willing to switch in mass, right? So we built a big D2C business. We had some big fundraising rounds. But even with that, they wouldn't make the jump. And again, a small population would, but not the entire. So from us, our big evolution was we knew we had to be clean in packaging. We had to be clean ingredients. We need to be clean in efficacy. But we also needed to be the same price, right? So it's almost taken us 5 years to get here. And now is when we're seeing the wave, right? Offering a better solution, but at a similar price point. It's really been the biggest unlock for us.
Yeah, I see a huge focus on product superiority on the one hand, or parity, I suppose. And on the other hand, economic parity. You know, I think a lot of sustainable brands, however you define sustainability, are working hard to break through to the mainstream. You know, there's obviously a whole specialty channel and a lot of brands that have found their following with, you know, a sort of subscale population. But I think given the mission of a lot of brands, including yours, the focus is increasingly on how do we reach the mass channels and start to change behaviors.
Yeah, agree. And you know, I think the exciting piece is the retailers want it too, right? Is one of the reasons we'll be in most, if not all, marquee retailers, is because they're putting their money where their commitments are. So it's actually been very encouraging to see is you have Target, Kroger, Albertsons, Safeway, and then the big strategics, Unilever, Henkel, Procter & Gamble, all putting these very aggressive 2025 plastics goals as well as ingredients, through and through. And they're starting also now to talk about regenerative agriculture through their entire supply chain. So what we're seeing is if there's a way to crack the economic piece, there is demand both from consumers and retailers to actually start to shift all these categories. So it's been an encouraging time for us.
I'm glad that you mentioned some of the incumbents. To your point, there have been some really interesting developments quite recently, although I remember going back almost a decade, most of the majors that you mentioned had either acquired somebody or done some experimentation that, one might argue was sort of tucked away until either the consumer or the retailer said, okay, I'm ready. Yep. But it sounds like you're finding the retailers are, eager to add selection that meets some of the characteristics that your products do. What is the competitive dynamic like? Do you find this is, growing the category, shifting the category? How do you think about the dynamic between some of those incumbents and a newer emerging brand?
Yeah, well, and maybe broadly put to one of the reasons we enjoy these conversations and again, appreciate you having us on today is it's going to come from consumers, right? The only reason that these big retailers and strategics have made these commitments is because Wall Street and or their investors or direct consumers are forcing them to, right? So one of the major big box stores just got, really frankly criticized in the public markets because their plastic usage is increasing, right? And it was publicized, it was brought up on the earnings call. So all of this is contingent on the listeners, right? Without that, nothing's going to happen. That said, I think the retailers, they're starting to shift. So I will say generally, cleaner products have a better margin profile for the retailers, but they don't move as fast. So usually it's accretive, which is why they like this. It's usually a higher income shopper too. So a larger retailer wants to attract this more. And I think what we're seeing in these categories is it's all incremental because you have massive organic food categories that have grown to be 10, 15, 20, 30% of overall grocery, whereas cleaning is sub 3, sub 4, it hasn't matched that. So we think it's just room to run. It's one of the reasons, again, why I think the retailers are so open to this. And at what point does the fourth plastic natural cleaning brand move the needle, right? And we've seen in this whole competitive dynamics, concentrates, dilutables, tablets, all these other form factors that have tried to reduce waste in household cleaning, they might work digitally because you can explain it to a shopper. They don't work in store. So all of these retailers, it's a graveyard of closeouts for every reduced waste form factor that's tried to shift behavior. So again, what we're seeing is excitement. I think there's frankly limited competitive developments right now that are meeting shoppers where they're at the same price point and still reducing waste and some negative chemicals. So it's complex. It's hard. We've been at it for 7 years. It's a hard space.
Yeah, it's super interesting, though. I had never really heard or considered that point about the importance of educating somebody on, transitioning to a different, not purchase behavior, but usage behavior for the different form factors. And, a lot of the way I approach things is sort of through the spreadsheet side of things, thinking about, concentrated powders have less weight and less cube. But I think what a lot of folks that have been entrepreneurs in the space for a long time have sort of come around to, not only with their own brands, but even B2B services, focusing on what works is a way to accelerate impact more than letting perfect be the enemy of the good. And I think there's probably going to be demand for different form factors for different consumers and scenarios.
Yep. Rising tide lifts all ships too, right? Which is why digitally certain form factors can win and retail others can. And we all help solve this issue. So we're wholly supportive.
you're finding that the retailers are increasingly adding distribution for cleaner products in these categories. Are you finding, you know, you mentioned the in-store education component of it. Is that a necessity in your case? And are the retailers creating, you know, wayfinding and other opportunities to help shoppers find and consider the products? Or is that stuff that you still got to do independently?
Yeah, you know, I think yes and no. You know, we'd always love more wayfinding with all of our partners. But I think the way we've designed this model is, how do we be so obvious that it does its education on shelf, right? So originally, we just had our milk cart and it was ingredient first. So it focused on our coconut-based ingredients. And frankly, it didn't work on shelf. There was a broad confusion of why and how, and why is my cleaning products in a milk carton? We spent 2.5 years redesigning to solve for A, it's a cleaning product, B, this reduces waste, and C, it's premium, right? And finally, we think we've nailed it where there is no education on shelf. Of course, there's some because no one's ever seen a milk carton in these categories, but it's like, I get it's a refill. I get it's less plastic, I get it's premium, I get it's better ingredients, right? So a lot of what we do is education on shelf, and it's taken, what, 7 iterations, also packaging, to get here. The other big piece we launched was the first filled and refillable aluminum bottles in the category. So when we started this brand, you know, 5 years ago, only refills. And we developed the technology, the intellectual property, and all of these pieces for the refills. But what we found is, even though we're winning amongst refills and cleaning, you have this whole ready to use that makes up 80-90% of the category. Like, you don't start with a refill. So I think the other big piece is we launched our aluminum bottles. And that was an intentional sustainability choice for us, because truthfully, we don't believe in single use aluminum being a better sustainable form factor. We believe in aluminum.
As opposed to what?
Frankly, single use plastic. Single-use glass is aluminum. It's just like the reusable bags. If you're using a different reusable bag every time, it's a lot of carbon, right? Yeah. It's challenging to make. So for us, it's like, how do we take a big step back and say, what is... Exactly. So yeah, so we think we've cracked it, right? It is a filled and refillable aluminum bottle, right, that you refill using our cartons. And when people see it on shelf, they get it. So I think, you know, again, it's we understand there's a lot of education to this, but we're trying to be the least amount of education in the space.
You know, how big of a factor is the conversation at retail? How big is refill in the conversation with retail? You know, do they view it as a barrier? Is it a driver? Do they think about some of the impacts it might have on loyalty and trip frequency and some of those things, building a basket?
Yeah, I think that's the good news here. In these categories, you refill and refilling, it's gaining a lot of momentum, and it's been around for a while, right? So hand soap refills today in the category represents, depending on your channel, about 30% of total sales. So it's a lot, right? You think about, even the big brands have big plastic tubs that you refill your hand soap. So, and that's growing at almost 12, 14, 15% annual growth rate. So it's growing very fast. Dish soap, it's about 20%. And people have gotten used to refilling their islands, right, in dish soap. And that's growing quickly. And with dish power spray, again, think about that blue bottle, there is a refill now. And frankly, the refill is, we believe, a profitability play from one of the big strategics, because that big dish power spray trigger is very expensive, right, for them. Mm-hmm. But that said, it's still more sustainable, right? So dish refills are now growing at a clip never seen before. All purpose, it's a challenging category in refilling because people haven't much yet, but there's more and more development of dilutables, right? So it's not a little cartridge or 2 ounces, but it could be, you know, 32 ounces that makes 128 ounces added to water. So we're seeing some movement there. And then laundry, you know, it's kind of the Wild West right now, because you're seeing sheets come into the market and completely disrupt liquids. You've seen pods come into the market, and our cartons are just direct dose, right? You just directly dose into your machine. We're seeing these concentrated laundry detergents come out 32 ounces, and it's really gaining momentum. So we believe, again, there's a lot of support from retailers, again, potentially because of the margin profile and sustainability. But we think there's a lot of momentum across refilling right now.
Hey, folks, this is the part of the show where we say thank you and see you soon to the general audience, plus and higher tier members of decarbonize.co. Stay tuned for the rest of the episode. Hey, it's Keith Anderson from decarbonize.co, inviting you to join our brand new Slack community for retail, e-commerce, and consumer product professionals that want to keep up with what's new, interesting, and actionable in industry, climate, and sustainability action, and connect with your peers. As I got into this work, one of the things that I found so invigorating is how passionate and willing to help everyone is. But I haven't found a community composed of people across functions in the industry that are working in or want to work in climate and sustainability. And so we're launching the community to connect both sustainability experts and practitioners and people in conventional roles like product design, packaging, supply chain, marketing, and merchandising to share their work, ask for help, connect about career opportunities, keep up with the latest industry development. And we'll be previewing who our upcoming guests on the podcast will be and giving you an opportunity to pose questions to our guests. So I can't wait to meet you and have you meet some of the other members of the community. To join us, you can visit decarbonize.co. You'll see a call to action on the homepage, or use the intelligence menu at the top of the page where you'll also see a link to join.
Well, if folks want to learn more about Clean Cult or you, where would you send them?
So you can find us on Amazon, next day delivery, and we are the first, again, aluminum products now on the platform that you can price same price as plastic products. Our website, cleancult.com, and that's clean space cult. And then leading retailers, Albertsons, Kroger, Safeway, Walmart, all around you nationwide. And I think our biggest ask is advocate at the retailers, because those are who will make the decisions. And if you demand shifting these products, then the retailer will have to shift these products. So we're really hopeful, and we see a lot of, you know, opportunity, and I think it's just the beginning for us and also the industry.
Well, thanks very much for joining us. Great to have you on the show.
Likewise. Thank you again for having me today.
Thanks for listening. I'm Keith Anderson, the executive producer and host of Decarbonizing Commerce. Sonic Futures handles audio, music, and video production. If you enjoy the show, we'd really appreciate it if you took a moment to subscribe and leave a review or share it with a colleague. For the full episode and more member exclusive insight and analysis, join the Decarbonizing Commerce community at decarbonize.co. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode of Decarbonizing Commerce.